Welcome to Class Matters, an educational program examining the role played by social classes and the class divide in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Rich Whitney.
I'm Paula.
We discuss matters of class because class matters. And today on Class Matters, we're going to celebrate and honor the memory of Daniel Ellsberg. Daniel Ellsberg, an American hero in our estimation, passed away a few days ago, late last week. And for those of you who don't know, Daniel Ellsberg originally became well known as a whistleblower during the Vietnam War era. At a time when the American people were being systematically lied to and misled and misinformed about the true nature of the Vietnam War, going back to its origins in the 1950s when the United States blocked a free and fair election that would have kept the country of Vietnam united. But the United States didn't like that because it appeared that National Liberation Patriot Ho Chi Minh would have won that election. It instead
easily.
Went, yeah, exactly. It instead went with a plan that kept the nation divided and on and on. And we were constantly being told that the Vietnam War was a necessity in the global struggle against communism, because if we let South Vietnam fall, then the Philippines would fall and other countries would fall, and then we'd be surrounded by communists and it would just be horrible, et cetera, et cetera. We were told so many lies. We were told lies about the Gulf of Tonkin incident that led to the introduction of regular troops into South Vietnam.
That turned out to be a total fabrication.
Yeah.
Kind of like the ghost of Kiev that shot down 7 Russian planes. Total fabrication.
Yeah.
And it's kind of same as it ever was. But back in the 60s, we had a whistleblower who went to the New York Times.
Yes.
Today, the New York Times is totally perverted and corrupted. But we have whistleblowers who get put in prison.
Right.
But we have alternative media, which is why they're trying to shut it down.
Yeah, and this is also very important, not only to remember our history correctly and to get a better sense of what actually happened during that era, it's also important to remember what Daniel Ellsberg has done since then, which is, in my estimation, equally important in his really 5 decades of activity in the peace movement. And it's also important because, as you were just contrasting what was going on back in the 1960s and early 70s with what's going on today. Today we have another journalist, a real journalist, who's being persecuted also with an indictment under the Espionage Act, the same unconstitutional law that the authorities, then the Nixon administration, sought to persecute Daniel Ellsberg under, and that, of course, is Julian Assange. Julian Assange
is not even an American citizen.
But he is a hero.
He's a hero, yeah. But he's not a spy. I mean, how can they prosecute him under, hey, you betrayed your country? This isn't his country.
This isn't his country. What he did, but like Daniel Ellsberg, he did expose massive war crimes. And for that, the establishment in this country wants to prosecute and persecute him. There's been recent developments in that case where Julian Assange has lost almost his last appeal. I think there's one more thing he can do to try to avoid being extradited to the United States. But he is also otherwise set to be prosecuted under this pernicious and unconstitutional law, the Espionage Act, which basically criminalizes journalism.
Well, as I think he's pointed out, they're saying that I gave information to the enemy, but who I gave the information to was the public.
Yeah.
Why does the ruling class think of the public as the enemy?
Yeah,
think about that.
Yeah, that's right. So there's a lot of parallels between Daniel Ellsberg and Julian Assange and what's going on with that. And there's a very good article at Consortium News, consortiumnews.com, about the Assange case, that actually more than one that you can look up, that is very revealing. So we'd recommend you go to that site to learn more about the Assange case. I'm sure we'll be covering it before too much longer. But let's get back to Daniel Ellsberg. I want to start with an article that is from Jacobin magazine. We're kind of lukewarm about that usually, but this is a pretty good article by Chip Gibbons, and it's simply entitled, Daniel Ellsberg, American hero. Few have contributed as much to resisting the horrors of war and the accompanying undemocratic regime of secrecy as Daniel Ellsberg, who died today, a few days ago, at the age of 92. Few people can say their actions helped to strengthen press freedom, end a war, and bring down a presidency. Daniel Ellsberg did just that. Ellsberg came to prominence in 1971 when he photocopied a secret history of U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War, which became known as the Pentagon Papers, and gave a copy to the New York Times. The New York Times' decision to publish the papers set off a landmark press freedom battle that went all the way to the Supreme Court.
You gotta feel sorry for that poor whistleblower in Ukraine who made copies of the tapes of Joe Biden on tape, like making, you know, deals for bribery.
Oh, right.
And they kept the tape for insurance purposes.
Right.
Because they would just totally reveal this if they got into trouble. Uh-huh. Reveal it to who?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's all covered up. Now take it to the FBI. Uh-huh. The FBI sat on it.
Yeah, that's right. Ellsberg became the first whistleblower indicted under the Espionage Act. And as we talked about on a Glenn Greenwald article 2 or 3 weeks ago, the Espionage Act was originally put into law during the first Red Scare around World War I. It was used to prosecute people who opposed the war at that time. But he was the first whistleblower indicted under the Espionage Act. In addition to seeking an indictment, Richard Nixon also set up a White House plumbers unit to gather dirt on Ellsberg. And frankly, it is only because people like G. Gordon Liddy and the others in the plumbers unit actually broke into Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office to try to get some dirt on him to frame him. That is really the only reason why, well, probably the only reason why Ellsberg didn't end up in prison.
Now, that used to be considered illegal. Isn't that ironic? Now, because of Obamacare, the first thing that Obamacare did was give $50 billion to every medical place in the country, doctor's offices, clinics, hospitals, to put everything on computer. They don't have to break into their office anymore.
Yeah, that's
they
right.
just click a button and there's your whole medical history just ripe for them to look at.
Yes, that's
no
right.
No privacy anymore.
The plumbers unit, of course, would later be at the heart of the Watergate scandal that resulted in Nixon's downfall. For the next half a century, Ellsberg was a continuous campaigner for peace and disarmament, as well as the unflinching champion of those who faced the wrath of the same secrecy regime that had sought to imprison him. And we actually had the privilege of hearing Daniel Ellsberg speak during the 1980s when there was the resistance to the Reagan administration's illegal wars against the people of Nicaragua and El Salvador, et cetera, the support for the terrorists
Honduras.
In Central America. Yeah, so, and he was a major part of the movement at that time. While Ellsberg spent 5 decades as an anti-war activist, his career began in a very different way. In Ellsberg's own recounting, he had once been an ardent Cold Warrior, but his experiences working for the war machine led to a change of heart.
Too bad most people don't have those kind of morals.
He worked in a number of positions within the U.S. national security state. He was in the Pentagon the day North Vietnamese forces allegedly attacked the USS Maddox in the Gulf of Tonkin. He quickly became aware of the fact that the government was lying about the incident. He traveled to Vietnam twice, first in 1961 as part of a Pentagon fact-finding mission, then again in 1965 as part of a State Department mission. In addition to being involved with the U.S. war in Vietnam, Ellsberg was involved with U.S. nuclear war policy, something he described as being a doomsday planner. Eventually, Ellsberg would become horrified by the prospects of a nuclear doomsday and turn against the Vietnam War. While working at the Pentagon-connected RAND Corporation, Ellsberg went from defending the war to become actively involved in anti-war organizing. He befriended Howard Zinn and Noam Chomsky, participating in demonstrations with them. He led an affinity group during the 1971 May Day protest against the war that included both Zinn and Chomsky. But the pivotal moment in Ellsberg's life occurred in August 1969 when he attended an anti-war conference. He listened to the stories of draft resistors who would be jailed for their act of courage. After hearing them, Ellsberg went into the bathroom, lay down on the floor, and began to cry. At this point, Ellsberg made his most fateful decision. Ellsberg had first come to view the war as a mistake, but eventually came to realize it was a crime. While a mistake can be corrected, a crime must be resisted.
Well, that's what they say about Julian Assange. He didn't commit the crimes. He exposed the crimes.
Yeah, that's so exactly right.
The people that committed the crimes are still rich and powerful.
Yeah.
The person who exposed them is rotting in a dungeon in London.
Yeah, that's right. As a RAND employee, Ellsberg had access to a 47-volume, 7,000-page study on the Vietnam War. This study went all the way back to the Truman administration when the United States had funded French attempts to recolonize the country. It proved that step by step across two decades in multiple administrations, the U.S. government had lied to the people about the war. Ellsberg decided to release the top secret history to the people. Whistleblowers today are able to copy and transmit large amounts of data with ease, but at the time there were no...
Not anymore, they can't.
Well, right. But, well, of course, Edward Snowden was able to do it. Well,
and
I guess...
now they're no longer allowed to use jump drives.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah,
and that was
right.
Over 10 years ago.
That's
so, yeah.
Right. Right. But the only way for Ellsberg to copy the documents was with a photocopier. This task took months. Ellsberg initially attempted to give the Pentagon Papers to members of Congress, but they were reluctant to accept them. He then turned to the New York Times. After intense internal deliberation, the paper, guided by its general counsel James Goodale, decided that publishing them was in the public interest, and the First Amendment protected the right to do so.
Boy, how the New York Times has fallen.
That's right. The Nixon administration sought an injunction under the Espionage Act preventing the New York Times from continuing to publish the secret history. Temporarily silenced, Ellsberg took the Pentagon Papers to the Washington Post. The Post published the rest of them before also being hit with an injunction. This began a process where, as one paper was enjoined, another would step up and publish the Pentagon Papers.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. In addition to the press, Ellsberg arranged for the anti-war senator, Mike Gravel, to receive a copy. Gravel entered them into the congressional record.
He was so awesome.
Yes, he was. Eventually, the Supreme Court ruled that the government could not prevent newspapers from publishing the Pentagon Papers, yet the court left open the question of whether newspapers could be prosecuted under the Espionage Act after they had done so. As a result, Gravel struggled to find a publisher to print the Pentagon Papers, though eventually the Unitarian Universalist Beacon Press stepped in. While it remained an open question whether the Espionage Act could be used against a publisher, the Nixon administration brought Espionage Act charges against Ellsberg and Anthony Russo for liberating the Pentagon Papers. Ellsberg had fully expected to spend the rest of his life in jail, but drawing on the experience of war resisters, he copied them anyway. As he would later tell a journalist when turning himself in, "Wouldn't you go to jail if it would help end the war?" The Nixon administration's misconduct, however, had so soiled the case that a judge had to throw it out. Prior to this, the draconian nature of the Espionage Act had all but ensured Ellsberg's and Russo's convictions. Ellsberg's pursuit of a better world did not cease. He was a frequent fixture of protests against U.S. wars, whether they be in Central America or Iraq. By 2018, Ellsberg had been arrested 87 times in acts of civil disobedience. Ellsberg also took on renewed prominence during the Obama years. Army Private Chelsea Manning gave secret documents about U.S. wars to WikiLeaks. Manning, like Ellsberg, was indicted under the Espionage Act. In the midst of that court-martial, The Guardian began publishing a series of revelations about the National Security Agency's global surveillance programs. This information came from whistleblower Edward Snowden. Soon, Snowden would also be indicted under the Espionage Act.
But he was smart and got out.
Yeah, that's right. A new war on whistleblowers was underway, and the Espionage Act was the government's main weapon against them.
Oh, yeah. Obama used it more times than all previous presidents before him combined, added up.
Yeah, that's right. Ellsberg was vilified by the political establishment when he released the Pentagon Papers. Henry Kissinger, who recently marked his 100th birthday, dubbed him the most dangerous man in America. Yet as the decades have passed, history has proven that Ellsberg's acts were heroic. When new whistleblowers like Manning popped up, some commentators perversely tried to contrast them to Ellsberg. He was a good whistleblower, they were not. Ellsberg never stood for that, as he recognized himself in their actions. He told journalists, "I was willing to go to prison. I never thought for the rest of my life I would ever hear anyone willing to do that, to risk their life so that horrible, awful secrets could be known. Then I read those logs and learned that Chelsea Manning was willing to go to prison. I can't tell you how much that affected me." Ellsberg not only spoke out on behalf of Manning, but attended the court-martial. It was through his campaigning against the Espionage Act that I got to know him. This is the author speaking, of course. I saw him speak in person for the first time at a rally outside Fort Meade on behalf of Manning. Years later, as policy director of Defending Rights and Dissent, I spoke to him as Ellsberg supported our work to reform the Espionage Act, tried to halt the extradition of Julian Assange, and secure a pardon for Daniel Hale, who, by the way, is languishing in prison not far from here in the Marion Federal Penitentiary right now. But that's another story. Ellsberg's commitment and compassion were incredibly clear to me. When it came to whistleblowers persecuted and tortured by the U.S. government, the stakes weighed heavily on his mind. In December 2022, when Hale supporters organized a virtual press conference calling for a commutation of Hale's sentence, we asked Ellsberg to speak. It was clear he was not feeling well, and none of us thought that he would actually make it. Yet to the surprise of all the organizers, Ellsberg appeared, wearing a full suit and tie. Such was his dedication to freeing his fellow whistleblower. In recent years, Ellsberg became increasingly focused on abolishing nuclear weapons. In 2017, he published his second memoir, revealing for the first time his role as a doomsday planner. He also made another revelation. At the time that he copied the Pentagon Papers, he also copied a study of the U.S. response to the 1958 Taiwan Straits crisis. According to the study, U.S. generals pushed for a nuclear strike. By publishing the study, Ellsberg had again violated the Espionage Act. In doing so, he had two aims. First, with tensions heating up between the United States and China over Taiwan again, Ellsberg wanted to warn the world how perilously close it had come to nuclear war in the past. Also, he challenged the U.S. government to charge him so that he could fight the constitutionality of the Espionage Act. This was not Ellsberg's final battle with official secrecy. 2 months before his cancer diagnosis, Ellsberg revealed that in 2010, WikiLeaks had given him copies of the materials provided by Chelsea Manning. Ellsberg had held on to the materials as a backup. Although he never published them, the Espionage Act equally criminalizes retaining national defense information as it does publishing it.
Well, unless you're Clinton or Biden.
Right, yeah.
Then or, it's okay.
Right, or other people like
Pelosi,
General Petraeus, etc.
Yeah.
Ellsberg urged the U.S. government to indict him along with Assange. Again, he made his motives clear. He wished to stage a constitutional challenge to the Espionage Act. In a recent interview with the Washington Post, Ellsberg noted the similarities between the Vietnam War and the current war in Ukraine. Both wars were obviously stalemated, but respective governments denied it. "I'm reliving a part of history I had no desire to live again, and I hoped I wouldn't. And by the way, that makes it easier to leave. This is where I came in," Ellsberg told his interviewer. In his email announcing his terminal cancer, the threat of nuclear war was clearly weighing heavily on Ellsberg's mind. Stating that the world risked nuclear war over Ukraine or Taiwan, Ellsberg wrote, "It is long past time, but not too late, for the world's publics at last to challenge and resist the willed moral blindness of their past and current leaders. I will continue as long as I am able to help those efforts." While he viewed the world as close to catastrophe as ever, he noted, "I'm happy to know that millions of people, including all those friends and comrades to whom I address this message, have the wisdom, the dedication, and the moral courage to carry on with these causes and to work unceasingly for the survival of our planet and its creatures." When I interviewed him for the 50th anniversary of the Pentagon Papers release, it was clear that he was far less interested in reminiscing about the past than carrying forward his urgent work to avert nuclear war and reform the Espionage Act. Honoring Ellsberg requires not just recalling him as a historic figure, but carrying on his work and legacy to dismantle the machinery of war that has claimed far too many lives and end its accompanying regime of secrecy that crushes truth-tellers while granting impunity to war criminals. Well, very well said. Again, that article you can find at Jacobin Magazine online, and it's by Chip Gibbons, entitled Daniel Ellsberg, American Hero. We'd like, if time permits, to share, well, at least one, maybe two more articles about Daniel Ellsberg. And I really, really like this. I'm going to read at least part of it. This is by Ray McGovern. Ray McGovern, another great whistleblower and journalist, former employee of the FBI, who in turn has, somewhat similarly to Daniel Ellsberg, made a more of a second career out of exposing the lies being disseminated by our government.
I don't think he was a whistleblower. I think he is someone that has come to believe that the whole war machine, the empire, is
well, wrong. That's true. Yeah, I don't know if, to what extent he might have been a whistleblower, but in any event, he's become a great journalist against the national security state and against war. And you can find this article at antiwar.com by Ray McGovern. It's entitled Dan Ellsberg's Parting Plea, Don't Wait. Sam Adams Associates for Integrity honored the late Daniel Ellsberg with our annual award for Fearless Integrity on April 11, 2023. It was clear that Dan summoned much of his remaining strength to leave an unambiguous message to people of conscience as to why they should blow the whistle on government lies as he did, but now, not later. It goes on and talks about how this was filmed and where you can find this and so on. But here's the important part. During his speech, Dan's words speak for themselves, and so Ray McGovern had them transcribed. This is the important part. So this is now quoting Ellsberg. Two things. We did not turn against the Vietnam War because of lies. We were used to that and had never objected before. Nor did we turn against the war because it was not winnable. The Joint Chiefs of Staff had said the war was winnable, if only the President would do more murder, cross more international boundaries, going into China and North Vietnam, than he was willing to do. All was winnable. It was the President who decided that opting for stalemate, however bloody and escalating, was preferable to him to getting out, to losing, or to pursuing an absolutely vain effort proposed by the Joint Chiefs of Staff of escalating to the North. And that is happening right now in Ukraine. So people did not break with the war because it was lied about. They did not go to prison because it was unwinnable, but because it was wrong. And they all knew it was wrong, that these lies were about crimes and sins and evil that should stop immediately. Murder, not just your ordinary lies about cost overruns, but lies that were killing people. And thus I've said to many people since then, do not do what I did. Don't do what I did. Don't wait till the bombs are falling and thousands more have died. Act like Catherine Gunn, and there's a link there to talk about her. Act like I wish I had done in 1964, when I knew that people were being lied to death. Put out documents to that effect before the war, right at the time, at whatever cost to oneself, at whatever risk, which is not even comparable to the massacres that were actually ongoing or in process. Do what I wish I had done in 64, not what I waited till 69 and 71 to do. Act like Catherine Gunn and Ed Snowden and Tom Drake, Bill Binney, and many others on the list of Sam Adams awardees, and particularly Ed Snowden and Julian Assange. And that ends the quote. There's more there. He then talks about some of the earlier award winners of the Samuel Adams Award. But the important part that we wanted to share with you today was that kind of parting quote by Daniel Ellsberg from just a couple of months ago. All right, and the final thing we want to share with you, also from just a couple of months ago, is that Daniel Ellsberg, a couple months ago, was one of the first signers. He was the very first signer and presumably one of the drafters of a letter about Ukraine that was addressed to Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
Oh, good luck with that. That guy's a nuclear madman.
I know, but, you know, he did what he had to do and what he did, what was right.
Right. It's good to protest.
It is.
You know, these people are out of their minds, but sane people have to stand up and go, what?
Yeah.
You think you can nuke Russia and get away with it?
Yeah, that's
You're
right.
Crazy.
So, this is an open letter addressed to Secretary of State Antony Blinken. As individuals working for nuclear disarmament and arms control, we urge the State Department to promote a ceasefire and vigorous diplomacy in Ukraine to prevent a nuclear catastrophe. After a year of combat following the Russian invasion, there is little likelihood of a decisive military victory for either side. The longer the Ukraine war continues, the greater the danger that nuclear weapons will be used, whether on purpose or by accident. The war in Ukraine has created the greatest danger of nuclear conflagration since the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. Russia and the United States possess over 90% of the world's operational nuclear weapons. Vladimir Putin and other Russian leaders have said they would use nuclear weapons if absolutely necessary to defend what they consider Russian territory, and announced a plan to deploy nuclear weapons in neighboring Belarus. We should not dismiss as a bluff Putin's threat of nuclear war to retain Russian control of Crimea, which is home to ethnic Russians, the site of Russia's naval fleet, and part of Russia for nearly 200 years.
Well, over 200 years.
Right, but yeah. There was an interruption. But yeah, absolutely over 200. On the U.S. side, every president from Harry Truman to Joe Biden has rejected a no-first-use of nuclear weapons commitment, and many have threatened to use nuclear weapons. In 1950, during the Korean War, President Truman said launching nuclear weapons was under active consideration. During the Vietnam War, President Nixon secretly ordered B-52 nuclear bombers on high alert to pressure the North Vietnamese to surrender. And in 2007, President George W. Bush repeatedly stated all options are on the table should Iran pursue a nuclear program. Another real danger, however, was so many nuclear weapons on hair trigger alert and a serious breakdown in communications and trust between the U.S. and Russia is an accident, miscalculation, misunderstanding, or any number of possible triggers that could lead to all-out nuclear war without anyone intending it. There have already been at least 13 known cases where false alarms and close calls almost led to nuclear war. And the probability of a cyber attack, computer malfunction, or simple human error increases exponentially under wartime conditions. Military establishments in both Russia and the United States have been striving to make nuclear weapons more and more, quote-unquote, effective and, quote-unquote, usable, which also increases the risks. So-called tactical nuclear weapons can be as deadly as the bombs that killed hundreds of thousands of people in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and yet there is increasing talk of such weapons being used in a combat situation.
I'm pretty sure Antony Blinken's one of them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he said as much. And even more ominously, every plausible simulation of nuclear combat indicates that the use of tactical nuclear weapons against a nuclear-armed enemy would rapidly devolve into a sequence of devastating retaliations, resulting in billions of human casualties and the onset of protracted nuclear winter. A nuclear war would be the greatest catastrophe humanity has ever experienced. No cause, no principle, no consideration of maintaining or altering a particular power structure can possibly justify risking the future of human and other animal life on this planet. That is why ending the Ukraine war quickly is an existential necessity for all of humanity. Contrary to existing U.S. policy of discouraging or even blocking negotiations, as one mediator, the former Israeli prime minister, described the Biden administration's efforts, the Biden administration should employ its full diplomatic resources to promote peace talks without preconditions between Ukraine and Russia, and an immediate and comprehensive ceasefire, signed Daniel Ellsberg, and then it lists a whole bunch of other signatories who were involved in the movement for peace. But that's all the time we have. Thanks for listening to Class Matters, and our little tribute here to Daniel Ellsberg, and we'll be with you again next Monday.